woke up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining in.
Well, North Bay Stacks and Jacks. Now, tomorrow, Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 10, NASDAQ futures down 58. We have Mr. Carl Denninger. We're a little bit late because of the bleep show that is the new Kennedy construction. Ricky, how bad?
Pretty bad, man. Sorry about being late.
Just for the few blocks I'm on it, I looked at the rest of the mess and I go, Ricky's not going to be here on time. this is where maybe in a week or two we'll get 10 people working on it, and it's supposed to be done by November, and it'll be January like last year.
Oh, Chief, come on, man. For how long was the burn interchange? I mean, you know, I actually went through there, about 7 or 8 months ago. And it was finally to the point that the lanes were open.
Well, it's been open for a while, probably like a year.
Okay, well, it was not for, you know, 10.
11 and a half.
Okay, well, I was going to say, I mean, like, every time I went through Chicago...
Maybe you found 10 people working one day.
Oh, well, actually, I could probably... Yeah, you're right. I think I could count the number of actual human beings that were doing something reasonably called construction on my fingers.
No second shift. When I drove in the morning, there was nobody there. When I drive home at night, there's nobody there.
You know. So... Since our time is short today, I want to point out a couple of things that are, I think, really topical. They came across my feed in the last 24 hours, and it's a confluence of events, okay? One of them is actually, a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks old, but they're all correlated, okay? So... The first one is that, we seem to have this spending issue in our government, right? You know, like they spend way.
We don't worry about that though. We're worried about graffiti at the Kennedy Center.
Well, you might be worried about it from the standpoint of what it does to asset markets if it gets out of control. I mean, that's the reason you worry about it, right?
Absolutely.
Right. So there's that. Yesterday, a 2.5-year-old article. Well, let's see. Was it actually 2.5-year-old? 2 years old. Almost. Okay. 1/29/2023 was the publication date. An article that I wrote called Engineering versus Science Part 2. All right. And it had been on my advertising permitted side, which Google runs ads, because if you read any of the other stuff on the internet, you'll find that there are other things other than AdSense out there as ad networks, but they do things like, do this before you go to bed to lose 10 pounds by tomorrow morning. Okay, obvious BS, right? Or, you know, put this ear candle on your... Stupid. I mean, stuff that you look at and you go, what?
One slug of baking soda and you'll look like Superman in a week. You know?
Well, and if you can't pee, do this. And yeah. You know, I mean, it just... AdSense, at least, is thankfully void of that sort of nonsense, all right? You know, Google has its problems, but And their advertising network has its problems. But at least I don't have to, you know, I'm not promoting that sort of garbage. So anyway, they have a bunch of things you're not supposed to say. They threatened to throw me off during the crazy because I kept reporting on things that didn't go along with the so-called consensus view of what was going on with the little virus. So this article talks about the difference between the two kinds of disciplines, the scientific discipline and engineering discipline. And the primary difference, to boil it all down, because we don't have time to go through the whole thing, is engineering is deterministic and says you may not get it wrong, because if you build a bridge and you get it wrong, somebody's under it when it collapses and they die.
Yeah, well, that's a problem.
Well, right. Yeah. I mean, you know, and airplanes are supposed to be built using engineering disciplines, because if the airplane crashes, people die. Okay, so we have engineering is the standards for building houses. You know, if it falls down and you're in it, you know, we know what the outcome is going to be, right? So, or catches on fire. So we have these rules that we do not violate, and the reason we do not violate them is because people get killed when you do. And most of these things have been the origin of them were written in blood. Somebody didn't follow them, and someone died. Right? This is bad. The problem is that every single thing. Okay, is it going to rain? You know, just this last weekend, we had severe weather warnings up all over the place. There's going to be tornadoes. There's going to be hail. There's going to be da 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 da. It was the most overhyped set of those warnings I have seen in the last probably 5 or 10 years.
Now, if we were doing Stocks and Jackson, they were going to have 5 tornadoes, we'd have to say 10 so we get somebody to listen.
Well, yeah, okay, but
I don't do that, but that is the drill.
Well, right, but here's the point of the article, Chief. Whether or not there will be a tornado that rips through Plainfield, as there was a number of years ago when I lived in Chicago, is actually deterministic. Now, you'd say, well, wait a minute, what are you talking about? You don't know exactly where the tornado is. Well, you're right. I don't know precisely where the tornado is going to go or whether there's going to be a tornado. However, the fact of whether there will be a tornado is in fact deterministic. The reason we can't tell you in advance is we don't have enough of the information and we can't analyze it. The same thing, if you go to the doctor and he says you have cancer, it is in fact deterministic whether or not that cancer can be killed or whether you will be killed. At the moment of...
Or both, maybe.
Yeah, maybe both. But the outcome is in fact deterministic. It is, we believed for a very long time that the reason that a feather fell at a slower rate when dropped off a building than a rock was because gravity was not a constant. And it wasn't until we figured out how to build a vacuum pump and take the air out of a chamber and drop both of them from the same height and measure the time that we realized that gravity is in fact a constant. The reason that it didn't appear to be is that we didn't have all the facts. And so we were analyzing it the wrong way. All right. Now, we have a supposed 2.5% inflation rate right now, right?
No, we don't.
You and I know that. All right, come on, we talk about it all the time. But supposedly, we have a 2.5% inflation rate. Supposedly, we have an M2 number that, you know, they try to obfuscate you actually finding, but you kind of can.
Well, you can find it a month in arrears, doesn't do you any good.
Well, and by the way, it shows numbers that make your eyes bug out compared to the official rate of expansion of such things. Now I want you to take the following two pieces of information, one of which I just got a tickler on, and I've been trying to chase. It now has shown up on the street. The second one is this, which showed up on the 3rd of March, is that USA Spending. Remember, we've talked about that site on the show a few times. USASpending.gov, Supposedly, according to USAspending.gov, the rate of spending, as it shows in all agencies, looks about 50% higher than the MTS says it is. Now, that's impossible, right?
I'm not so sure it is.
Well,
the reason why I say that is if the debt is going up higher than the MTS tells you it ought to be.
Okay, you're right. And here, now you want the bad, you want the really bad, you want the part that may make stocks crash 90% if it turns out to be true. Yesterday, on the street, I've been chasing this for a little while, and I hadn't written an article on it because does this sound like tinfoil? And I just refused to go there.
What was the site? USSpending.gov. Right.
Not gov. Wait a minute. Yeah, it is. I think it's .com, isn't it? No, it is USSpending.gov. USAspending.gov.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And here's the bad one though. Supposedly, now this is Musk. This is Doge. I trust the man as far as I can throw him. Okay.
I trust him to be absolutely like he's always been his whole life. Everything's for him.
Well, yes. And by the way, some of the things he's done are really kind of cool. I mean, I'm not bagging on things like Starlink, okay, and the fact that
where did he steal all those engineers? Were they originally NASA?
Well, he's paying them.
So, I know, but yeah. I mean, where did they come from?
I don't know
from?
About steal. There's a decent, there's a fairly decent cadre of people that graduate from, you know, from colleges or just learn things and are. And by the way, he doesn't care whether or not you got a degree. He just cares that you can actually juice the numbers and come up with actual results, which is good.
I think
that's a fantastic way to look at things rather than the credentialism that we've fallen into, which is mostly bullshit these days. But the comment that he made is that he has found over a dozen electronic transfer initiating computers. Okay, so they're paying people that have no tie back to Treasury for the funds that are going out. In other words, they're counterfeiting.
Well, they're not counterfeiting, it's real money.
Oh no, they're counterfeiting. If it's not tied back to Treasury and an actual bank account that Treasury, you know, that they're not tied back to actual funds, it's counterfeiting.
Well, how do the people get the money?
Okay, you know,
it's got to go into their bank account so they can write a check or go get it.
Well, that's right, Chief. But the way that money is supposed to be created in the United States is that Treasury issues bonds, someone pays them cash for those bonds. Okay, now Treasury has money, right? And the fact that you have a fractional reserve system means that a bank can loan out, you know, capital, alleged capital, that it didn't collect from a depositor first. All right, I mean, that's the premise of this. And the reserve ratio is more or less supposed to be the control on this.
Except
process.
We don't have any reserve ratio anymore.
I know that got gotten rid of by Bernanke during the blow-up. I was one of like two people on the planet that actually read the bill that got rid of the limit on it before it was passed, and raised hell about it because it basically made possible an infinite growth in the so-called money supply. So the allegation is that inside the government are emitters of this credit with no tie back into the Treasury systems. Now, if that's true, and you better hope it's not, because if that's true, then this USAspending.gov figure that is allegedly inaccurate, that they say, it's not inaccurate.
You and I have always had this kind of basic disagreement on how this works. First of all, what you're saying is true. That's pretty bad. But the people who put the money in, are the Fed. They're the ones that go buy the Treasury.
You're making an assumption that there is a closed cycle here. That's the way it's supposed to work. Yes. However, what if it's not?
Yeah, but they've given them everything they want. What are they going to do more, for God's sake?
Because, Chief, when you build a grift and fraud-based thing and it starts and someone makes a profit from it, in order to make more profit, they have to do more of it. And it grows exponentially. It's like every other exponential function. Once you start doing this sort of thing, the incentive to continue it and accelerate it becomes insatiable.
Well, you also need to have your population arguing over graffiti and woke stuff in the Kennedy Center instead of worrying about this kind of stuff, because oligarchs are stealing all the dough.
Well,
our version of oligarchs.
You know, if I wanted to counterfeit $100 bills, I had to make a set of plates, get some paper and some ink, right? And I had to put a serial number on them because every single dollar bill has a serial number on it. And since I don't have the ability to do this in a way that you know, keeps track of what the hell's going on.
We'll have to, this is obviously a big discussion on Friday, but or I'm assuming Joel and Kenny are here. What you're saying is the way this loop ought to work, and just roll with me on this and we can fight about it on Friday. The way this ought to work is that the Treasury should be somewhat sacred in the money they sell bonds, they get money and they spend the stuff. The person who, it's a two-step process, which is kind of weird, but if you want to put money into the system, the Fed then, which supposedly is independent, they have the ability to go buy that bond in the open market and essentially write a fake check that cashes. That's essentially, but the Treasury is supposedly not supposed to be doing that. They either sell
Supposedly by law they can't.
That's what I'm saying. But they can. There's three ways you make money that they spend money. One is you borrow it, what the Treasury does.
Right.
Two is you tax for it, which essentially the government does. And three is you print it, which essentially the Fed does. Correct.
Well,
but now you're saying the Treasury is doing some of C, which is pretty interesting.
Now the Fed is theoretically not supposed to be able to technically print it. Because the Fed has to have the other side of the ledger somewhere, and I understand.
But they don't. They did $6 trillion of stuff they bought. Where'd they get the money? They made it up.
I understood. Well, but there is a second side of the ledger entry. It's there.
It's the other side of their balance sheet.
I get that.
It's not really a balance sheet though. It's a check to cash.
All accounting entries have two sides, and it is there. Now the argument can be, we've had this argument since there has been a Federal Reserve, and since closing the gold window and such. That this is totally out of control and it's stupid and it's screwing everybody except the guys at the very top, all right? But what is now being alleged is that these three things tie together, these three pieces of information, because if, in fact, Treasury is spending 50% more than it's accounting for in the MTS, effectively, the federal government is doing it, without Treasury having the tie back, then you have a completely unhinged monetary system, and everything that is denominated in that system, including every single asset in the United States and denominated in dollars, if that is discovered, confidence is likely to go to zero.
Ricky, take a note. This percolated when, actually, Greg Pappas, how many was it, a year ago, Carl? You were on, and he goes, hey, why is this the debt number going up faster than the MTS,
right?
And
we've talked about it.
If we don't get back on today, we'll talk about it on Friday. Do we have Joel?
No, nobody.
I
here
don't
yet.
See Joel yet. Well, you want to go on a quick break and then we'll come back?
No, we'll just keep talking to Carl until SP futures down 18, NASDAQ futures down 88. Gold. How far is this gold going to go?
Well, gold. For the people that are piling into it because they think that it's a hedge against this sort of event, history says this is a foolish, that's foolish.
Probably better than Bitcoin.
Well, again, better than. Okay,
I know.
I'm only half dead, Tom. You know, the...
At our age, we might be a little more than half.
Well, maybe a little more than half. Yeah, you got a point there. We're both about in the same bucket, you know. I mean, you're a little bit further down the road, but not a lot.
But here's one quick question on that thing, though. I've had a lot of my people are involved in the GDX, which is the gold miners. This is not
right.
This is not a shove for anything. The reason why I've had them in there and not the gold is for some reason they have not kept up with the gold.
Right, and so it's an arbitrage play that it will catch up because, you know, one is the other kind of, sort of, right?
Yep. Well, it should. I'm saying how much...
Now you're wondering.
At some point, you would think that the extra $100 of the price of gold is going to be 90% profit. But it hasn't happened yet because somewhere along the line, all your expenses are in. Unless the only thing that's weird, Carl, is... When I first got to the trading floor, a lot of people traded gold. Now, there was no GDX, and the gold only traded on the New York Merck or something. So guys didn't really do that from the floor. But there was Barrick Gold. There were three or four gold companies, and the prices didn't always move like you thought it would with the gold. And those guys used to put out, I don't know if it was weekly or monthly, but the guys on the floor from the old, remember the old machine that was like green and the stuff came across yellow, that was the tape, the ticker tape, was either Reuters or Dow Jones. Those companies would actually publish, like monthly or weekly, how much they had hedged forward.
Yeah.
So if you were clever, say you got a Barrick Gold, which is a, GOLD, it's trading 1950. They might have said, we hedged 90% of our gold at whatever, $2,500 an ounce. You know, now it's $3,000. Well, of course, the stock's not going to move up because they're not getting the extra $500. But then all of a sudden, but they would tell you when the hedge came off, and then people would actually be able to trade with all this information. I don't see any of that anymore. Am I just looking in the wrong spot?
You're looking in the wrong spot. You don't have access to it anymore, but
right.
Somebody does.
Yeah, somebody does.
All right, Joel's up, so I'm going to get out of his way.
Okay, Joel, how are you, bud?
Good morning, Chief. What a difference a week makes.
With your team?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boy, but the Big Ten and the ACC got sort of the thumb, the, you know, up yours from the selection committee, eh? What did Michigan up? Michigan a fourth seed or a third seed or something?
No, guess again, Chief. You wanted to get me started on Iran. Guess where they put us?
I know it's a bad regional, but what's the seed?
Five.
Five. And they're considered... Who's considered the best team in the Big Ten? Michigan State?
Yeah.
They got what, a three?
Two. Here's the absurdity things. Okay, we lost to Michigan State twice pretty bad, right? So they're a two seed. All right? I don't have a problem with that. Maryland, who we split with, right? They're a three seed. All right? Wisconsin, who we beat twice, including the Big Ten championship game, including winning at their place, is also a three seed ahead of us.
That's well.
Is that wild? Okay. And then they put us against the hottest number 12 seed in the country, UC San Diego. They're 30-3. Just tearing up. I don't even know what league
are they a regular 12 or are they a play-in 12?
They're a regular 12.
Okay. The play-ins are 11? The play-ins are 11s, right?
The play-ins are 11s. So Wisconsin's a 3 seed, okay? And then they make us a 5 seed. Not only that, we played 3 games in a row, right? Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right? Maybe give us a little break. Maybe let us go play on Friday. Friday, Sunday, right? Give an extra day of rest. No. They put us out in Denver in the altitude, a 10 o'clock game on Thursday.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're not fans of Cunningham.
Oh, man, not at all. Not at all. And, of course, North Carolina, who the guy, you know, is the head of the NCAA committee, gets his team, North Carolina, in as a play-in team.
Wait a minute. He said he wasn't in the room. He left the room. He wasn't even part of the debate.
Oh, yeah. Wink, wink.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right.
They all forgot who he was and who he was. As soon as he walked out, they forgot all of that.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, the top seeds look good, you know, as always. You know, Duke, I just don't know about Cooper Flag. I don't know how hurt he is. I mean, Auburn, you know, top seed. Plus in our bracket, too, we got Auburn and Michigan State, you know. So
that's unreal.
You know, I mean, but you always have, you know, there's always a tough road to haul. But I was out the last few days, Chief. We had a little relief rally here in the market. And I got a question for you. I mean, and I know there's always been the difference, right, between, you know, the contracts and, you know, the rollover. But do you see the premium distance now? And I know it's mostly tied to interest rates and other factors. But do you see where the March is going off to, well, we're going off the board on Friday, compared to the June contract? Did you look at that at all?
Actually, you mean you're talking about it's in the S&Ps, right?
Yeah.
It's like 60 points.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's supposed to be the premium in the SPOOs is supposed to be the interest minus the dividend.
Yeah.
Well, the interest is kicking up there a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
And the dividends are, who's paying the dividend these days? What's the dividend rate in the S&P?
I don't know. I mean, and I've seen it, you know, back in the low interest rate years, you know, I've seen them like real close together, and I've seen them come apart a little bit. But I mean, that must have been one fun.
I used to calculate that every day when I was on the floor. And for those no, we're talking. This is somewhat technical now. You ask yourself, self, if I'm going to buy the futures instead of all the stocks, what am I going to pay? Well, if you buy the future, if you buy the stocks and you don't have the money or the implied interest, you have to borrow money to buy the stock, right? So there's your interest component. So say that's 6%. All right. So then you say, well, yeah, but if I own the stocks versus the future, I get the dividends. So the premium ought to be the broker call rate minus the dividends. So if the broker call is 6, the dividends are 3. Over the course of the year, the year out future should be 3% higher than the cash.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, boy, I don't see anybody doing that calculation anymore. Does anybody know what the broker call is, for God's sake?
I'm sorry, what was that last
Does
question?
Anybody even know what broker call is?
No, I don't know. But, I mean, I don't want to, you know, I mean, I know the difference. I know the math. You know, I've also seen it, you know, traded a discount, too. You know, when there have been some tough times. So I don't know if you can necessarily look at that as like an optimistic thing, right? Because...
Well, but the interest rate, and this is what I, you know, whenever you give lectures, which I haven't done in a while, but I used to give them all the time, one of the hardest things to impart into people, Joel, is you can't just look at broker call. Because if you're trading, you don't get broker call. I mean, if you have a big account... You know, we had a pretty big account back in those days. I had 10 traders. I paid a half over broker call, and on short stock, I got 80% of broker call, which is pretty good, but they're not the same. Broker call meant nothing. I was half over broker call, and if I shorted stock, I'd get 80% of broker call. It's sort of like a stock. Some of the simple stuff, if you say IBM just traded 180, it's 179.90 bid at 180, 10 cents. What's the price? 180. No, it's not. It's a historical artifact. If you want to buy it, you're paying 10 cents more. If you want to sell it, you're selling 10 cents other. Yeah, but just traded 180. But you didn't get 180. It's not your your price is what do you have to buy it for and what do you have to sell it for, right?
Yep. The good old days. We're talking some arbitrage there. But I was off for a few days, and you know, I recalculate my you know, my levels. Of course, we did the roll, you know, last Wednesday, and you always see funky price action here during that time. But We'll see. I mean, we had a little two-day rally off the low. I mean, these are the kind of days where you just don't want to fall apart, right? After two good days, you want to, you know, maybe get an inside day. I know we got a big day tomorrow. I don't anticipate him doing much. I mean, the inflation data that you got and the unemployment data you got, I think that the unemployment data, I mean, it's gonna be okay. Is it gonna be okay in 2, 3, 4 months down the road with all the layoffs and less government spending? I don't know, but you got some pretty benign numbers, and I expect the Fed just to be saying stay the course. I think if you're looking for that dovish turn, might just have to wait. But then Pump and Powell can always surprise us again.
What are you? And I don't know how much you listen to some of the stuff that Carl and I talk about, and because some of it's kind of scary. How do you match up these numbers? And this is kind of a generic question. If you look at the CPI, and it'll tell you, you know, physician services over from last year are up, you know, 2.6% or some crap. And Carl will dig something out of, you know, the statement, the government statement, how much they're spending on Medicare and Medicaid. And the number's up like 30% from last year. So how can you, or 28% or some incredible, there can't be 28% more doctors. Okay, so that's out, I don't think. Are they seeing 28% more people? The prices they can't be up only 2.6%. I have no idea what the number really is. Because it seems like the differences, the bifurcation is getting bigger and bigger, isn't it? Or am I just looking at too much stuff?
I'll end this on a pretty broad. I mean, you got some people banging the door that really inflation's really closer to 1.5%, or true inflation, 1.5%. And then you got other people saying, oh, no, really, it's closer to 7-8%, right? So you're going to have, you know, maybe it's some seasonal adjustments, but I think you're looking in the weeds a little bit on that one. I think inflation is steady. I don't think it's going down. I think it has a higher probability of rising than falling. And I just don't see, you know, the next, you know, big catalyst for the market to go higher being lower interest rates. We'll find that out on Wednesday.
Yep.
But, Chief, I'm glad we caught up this morning. And as always, go blue. We'll talk next week, see if we're in the Sweet 16 or not.
It'd be nice if you were. I don't have to worry about my Irish or not. I mean, you can't be in the 16 if you're not in the 64.
Or 68 or 72.
Whatever it is. They're not even going to be in the NIT, for God's sake.
Yeah. All right. Well, horrible. You had a good football year. So.
You can't have both, eh? All right, bud, take care. Do we have Kenny?
Yes, we do.
We do.
Hey, bud, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It constantly is amazing to me, Kenny. Last night, you know, it's St. Patrick's Day, and I don't really do the other days. But I like to go out and, you know, have a sandwich on St. Patrick's Day and a beer because it's, you know, my Irish side. So I go, and, of course, I get to go to the local pubs, and this guy that I've known forever. hey, Chief, can I sit next to you? What do you think about this market? You know, the guy's retired. I think he's retired. I don't know if he's doing any work at all, but, I mean, he's not my client, so I don't dig into it. Because, you got to be careful. You don't want to give any advice to anybody, and we don't know their stuff. So he starts telling me about, what do I think about the market? I said, well, you know, it's itchy right here. I mean, the interest rates are not what they were. They seem to not be going much higher here, at least right this moment in the 10-year. But they're a lot higher than where they were, you know, 2-3 years ago. And, oh, by the way, the market's a lot higher, and which is always a little bit of a warning sign. You've got deficits seem to be getting bigger and bigger. Don't know where that's going to go. If they have to start borrowing more money, it's probably a time. I said most of my people that I have that are retired, individual people, you know, I have protected because if they've had money the whole way, 401ks or something, they've got, that's the money they're living on, and we're not taking a chance. And I said, I'm leaving, you know, they're still long. We're probably, you know, 40 deltas long or something. Yeah. But if the market drops 20%, you know, given the day and given the puts we happen to have, we're going to lose three and a half, maybe. And if we scramble fast, we might not even do that. I said, but we're going to be paying for some puts on the upside. And Launch is in it as well. You know, these are really good stocks, and I got them from these guys, and I've made money. I said, you can't. The only advice I'm going to give you is you can't trade the last 5-year market. We got to trade the next 5-year market, and it just may not be the same.
Right.
Well, you know, yeah, but I still got money to give on these stocks. I bought them a lot lower. I'm like, don't tell me that. if the stock's trading to 80, I don't really care where you bought it. If it goes down to 75, I think we lost 5. I know most people think I'm nuts when I say that, but, you know, I think we lost 5. It's not my my brother went to the trading floor. He was on the CBOE, and he was also traded corn options. So the first day he was in the pit, some guy walks by, some old fart, which of course is probably younger than we are now, walks by and says, if you want to be successful with this business, don't ever remember what you paid for anything. It doesn't make any difference. It's whether you keep it or whether you don't. And he thought that was nuts. You know what? It's not nuts. Just what difference does it make what you paid for anything? Except on tax time. It's about the only time it makes something, right?
Right.
I'm long IBM at 200. I either want it at 200 or I don't. Whether
right.
I bought it at 50 or 850 doesn't make any difference, does it?
No, it doesn't, because you bought it when you bought it, and you at the time it was an okay buy, you know, and that's fine, and the markets will move as they move, and so it's only going to make a difference if you ultimately, you know, make that sale, right?
Yeah.
So I'm making it a profit, you're making it a loss, but whenever you're making it is when you make it. When you buy it, you had every intention of buying it at that price because that's where you thought it was fair at the moment.
Yeah, and every day you own something, it's like you bought it again today.
Correct.
Anyway, so what do you make of this? We have all kinds of crazy stuff going on to try and save money, allegedly in the government. I think it's
right.
more of a power play than that, but that's just my personal opinion. But yep. the money that they're going to save, even though they're, you know, half the population thinks that this is spectacular. We're cutting this guy's money out. Fact is, it doesn't amount to hardly anything in the federal budget. It, you know, might be 1%, 2%.
Well, it might be 1 or 2%, but I think what's more important, I think it's the recognition that all this, you know, all this waste, let's not call it fraud, let's just call it waste, has been happening. So whether it's, you know, $1 billion or $10 billion or $100 billion, the fact is that they brought it to light. I think that as an American, it's our taxpayer money. What are they doing with it? How is it being spent? So it, in any event, I'm okay with the fact that they're identifying it. Do I think it's going to make, you know, is it going to make a massive difference, you know, in the deficit? No, but it's going to wake some people up, and it's going to cause, I think, a change in behavior. And I think that's the good part of it.
You're one of my most level-headed guests. How can I say that without insulting anybody? I find a real distinction here, Kenny, between if it was me, and I'm going to say, well, Kenny Pulcheri, you're in this department. For instance, in my business, I think there's a massive overlap between what goes on in the Labor Department regarding stocks and the SEC. What the Labor Department's doing anything, and therefore I have no idea. So for me, I would say, well, you guys are both doing stuff on IRAs. Where does the Labor Department get to do that? You don't do that anymore. We'll let the SEC do that because it's their job, or the Fed or somebody. I mean, that's my idea. But what's happening now, and I guess a little bit of a political statement that I really have a problem with, you don't get somebody to walk in and say, on a program that was funded and signed by a president, it's in the law, well, we don't want to do that, you're all fired. That I'm not so sure is what... That's something that a despot does. That's not something... In other words, if these guys were to identify, which I think you are with the Consumer Protection Agency in those areas, if you were to identify duplication and waste, I'm all for it. I don't think that's what's happening. No, I don't like that program. It's out. Wait a minute. You didn't pass it. Oh, by the way, it might have been in the thing you signed last week, you big dummy. I mean, something's weird here to me, and I have a problem with the process. But that's just me. So it's not.
I don't think it's so much as that they're identifying something where they say I don't like it, so it's out. I don't think that's it. I think what they're identifying is, that there's been massive. Call it what you want, you know, all these NGOs that are started, everyone gives them money, and there's no real auditing. you know, of the event. We give you X amount of dollars, but there's no real auditing. They're paying themselves all kinds of money. They're writing off all kinds of expenses at our expense, at taxpayer expense. So whether the money that they save or identify really changes, it's not going to change a deficit, but I think it's going to wake people up and say, this, you know, this behavior has to stop. You know, who is this? Why are we giving $2 billion to Stacey Abrams, who just formed this NGO, you know, to put in new electric stoves in a rural part of America, yet she pays herself a massive amount of money to do this, and it's an NGO, right? It's a non-government organization that's a, you know, not-for-profit, all that stuff. But all these, what I think what we're finding out is a lot of these NGOs are have taken massive advantage of the system the way it is. So I think it needs to be corrected. Well,
I don't disagree with that. But why, if there is a number, I mean, yep. Every, I don't know where I read this, every year the Government Accounting Office gives the president or the rest of us, I guess, an estimation of waste in government.
Yep.
And the number has been somewhat stagnant, really, since the, you know, I started reading with the Bush administration. It was like $92 billion his first year, and it got to 97 or something, and it roughly is about 3% of the government. And I am no fan of these NGOs at all. I just wonder, 15, 20 years ago, I think there was massive problems in the subcontract. They didn't call it NGO. They'd give the contract to Kenny Pulcheri, and it was such a fat contract, he'd turn around and sell it to Ricky, who'd sell it to another guy. Which you know, it got to the same place in terms of waste. You were skimming right off. Instead of the NGO skimming like off the bottom, you were skimming off the top.
Right, exactly right.
So I mean,
exactly right. I
don't want any of it going on. I'm with you on that, but I don't know. Is it that much worse than it has been? I guess is my question. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know either. I guess in that, I guess we could do a study on that. I'm sure they will. But one way or the other, I am in the camp that I don't necessarily think this is a bad thing to identify this and to kind of call people out and to figure out, you know, how somebody who works in Congress and they make $175,000 a year has a $100 million net worth. I mean, how do you do that? How do you?
That's another story.
But we can talk about. I think that goes right to the point, right? I think that just goes right to the point of taking advantage of the taxpayer dollars and to enrich themselves. I mean, come on. You could point to all of them.
Do you have a problem with the guy doing it that's taking $9 billion from the government?
I have a massive problem with that. Do you?
Yeah.
You don't?
I think that's why we're having some problems with the people that are doing it. Somehow, you know, Kenny, sometimes it's not what you do, it's how you do it.
Right, correct.
If you get rid of people at the Department of Education, you know, just say we want to go back to more and more of the states, but I don't think most people in the country even know what the Department of Education does.
Well, and I think you're exactly right. I think that's also part of the problem, right? Well,
but I'm saying it's I'm going to say 90% of what is going on. Matter of fact, this question, Tom Foley, I don't know if I've told you this, but Tom Foley came to give a breakfast, or we had a breakfast for him at the SIBO when I was on the board. And he was a Speaker of the House at the time.
Yeah.
And one of the, you know, I'll say one of the dummy, total right-wing nut jobs on the floor turned into him about education. You know, we need to do this and that. And Tom Foley said, you know, in this country, virtually, he had the number right in the top of his head, how many different school boards there are in the country. And it's like, you know, it's in the thousands.
Yep.
And he said, and every one of those places is pretty independent. He said, we're in France. If you're in fourth grade and it's the fifth day of school, everybody's on the same page in the same book. He said, we don't want to do that here, and we never have. So the Department of Education here, whether they've done more than this lately and have gone off on some tangent, that very, very well could have happened. He said, but he goes, what we do is we try and equalize a little bit, that the crummiest places with no money, at least there's a book program or there's something. Or we have some standardized tests that people can use or not use. But we try and help around the edges because we really don't want to interfere with the local stuff, which has been our mantra really since day one, education. Now, has that changed, or are they trying to do more, or they've gone off the rails? They could have. But, I mean, do most people in this country have any idea that 90% of what goes on in the funding comes from local?
No, I don't think they do.
And well, I mean, at least the things that were, bitching about. Let's be right about it. And when you fire these people, don't say most of them didn't do any work anyway and they're all idiots. Is essentially what Trump said about it. Kenny, you don't do that. I don't.
I would agree. No, I would agree you don't do that. That's not helpful to anybody. That's not helpful at all to anybody. And I think that's just, you certainly can't talk about people and their job and the way that I think that the tone came out. But I think you can identify, as usual. Listen, when people do it in private companies, right, they identify. Mark Zuckerberg does it all the time. The bottom 10%, they're not producing, they're out. You hear it all the time in private companies where they go through, you know, this annual come to Jesus meeting, and they, okay, these bottom 10%, they're out. They're just not performing.
Who's the bottom 10%?
Say it again.
The problem is, who's the bottom 10%?
Well, that's right. Who's the bottom 10%? So they have to, you know, everyone defines that differently based on the business that they're doing, right? And so in this case, I think you have to just identify who's doing their job and who isn't, right? And who's now staying home as COVID, but working two jobs, right? They're collecting one job and this other gig economy going. I mean, is that fair as well?
Well, no, really? I just what I'm trying to, and I asked, you know, a couple of people on the show that are pretty much on the right side of things, right wing side of things. You can't ever. I'm trying to get the definition of if something comes through Congress. Now we seem to have a problem. Let's say an issue right now with are we talking about essentially a dictatorship. I'll use that term right there because we're talking about people that doesn't any judge who's against them. We want to throw the judge out, and the Congress. I mean, this is kind of where it's heading in some ways. Now, whether I don't think it's going to get there, but at some point, if Congress puts a bill together and says we have this agricultural plan, we're doing this, and the president signs it, and I guess when you do continuing resolutions, this president signed it, right? What does that mean? Now, if we have somebody, you, me, Musk, whoever goes in there and said, you know, this department's a little bit, what the hell's going on here? Nobody's working, and I mean, you're liable to find that someplace, right? And oh, by the way, these programs don't look like they're doing anybody any good. I'm trying to find what is the process. The process, I think, would be to go back to Congress and say, hey, look what we found. This is waste. It's not doing anything what you guys thought it was going to do, and what I signed. Let's get rid of it, and I think it has to go through the same backward principle. I don't know that somebody just gets to come in and fire everybody. I mean, maybe they do. I don't know, but it seems like somewhere or another. I mean, if you were in Hillside and you guys put together a proposal for a new train station, and you got the funding for it, the Congress apportioned it, and the president signed it. I don't know if the next president can come in and rip up the thing and fire everybody. But maybe he can. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to find out, does anybody even know the process? Or are we so far afield here we don't even know what we're doing anymore?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer to that question. But is it any different than if, you know, you have a job at IBM, and now there's a new, that now your boss gets replaced and somebody else comes in and he does an evaluation and then he goes like this, nope, you're out, because he's trying to now put his own, he or she is trying to now put their own name to this new job, and so they want people that are performing to their standards, I guess, which is why, you know, when you see a change of leadership, you always see layoffs. You know, he brings in people that he wants, right? People that are loyal to him, right?
The president of IBM has a different constitution than the president of the United States.
Well, okay, that's true, but I think the concept about going in there and putting your stamp on, right? You want a workforce that's going to work for you, that's going to be loyal to you, that's going to, right? It happens in private companies. Why shouldn't it happen in the public, in the government? Why should there be, you know, why should there be people that work in the government that just get comfortable working there through administration and never have to worry about are they ever at risk like they are in the private sector, right? You and I always worry about we're at risk if something happens, we're out of a job, or we lose a customer, we do this, we do that. In the government sector, no one ever worries about, you know, they don't worry about losing their job. Why?
We went down that road when everybody was a political employee and came in and fired people. And then we said we're not going to do that anymore, and we had a civil service system, which is imperfect, by the way, but there's a reason for it. But here's the thing. Trump is not the head of PTI, where I can fire wherever I want. I mean, that's why everybody seems to like that, but that's not what we are, Kenny.
I agree. Listen, I agree, but I think and I'm not necessarily saying that people should get thrown out just to get thrown out. But what I think this has brought about, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that there hasn't been this audit. There hasn't been this, you know, this.
Sure, there was. There was since Clinton.
Well, exactly. So all I'm saying is it may feel uncomfortable, it may feel ugly, but I think it's a necessary. I think at some point you have to turn around and say, wait, what are we doing? And where is this money going? Because they have a responsibility to the taxpayer. Are you happy that your taxpaying money is being spent to start a Sesame Street in Iraq? Or are you happy that they're studying, LGBTQ issues in Honduras? I mean, really? That's what we're doing
I think if you and I were nasty people, which we're not, everything we did, we can always pull some outrageous thing out of something and put that as the lead, is our justification for firing whoever we damn well please. And that's what these guys are doing, in my opinion.
Yeah,
you're always going to find something in there that, I mean, I've had 10 people tell me, I'm uncomfortable with the way this is handled. What do you mean? I just walked into a post office the other day and somebody was sitting on their fat ass and they didn't hustle up here and sell me stamps. They should all be fired. Okay, fine. I guess that's the way you're looking at it. By the way, how many hours a day do you spend on personal emails and your cell phone? Well, what do you mean? Why are you asking me that? Well, okay. remember the scene in Schindler's List?
I never saw the. I honestly, I never saw the movie.
I didn't watch it full through, but I saw this one scene where they're in this concentration camp, and this Jewish guy is working on a metal machine, and he comes in, and the Gestapo comes in, and they said, what do you do for us? What can you do? Show me what you can do. So the guy says, I can make this part, a lathe or whatever it was, I can make this part in 10 minutes. Really? So the guy, and that's why I should stay alive, essentially. So the guy makes the part in 10 minutes, basically working his ass off. And the guy says to him, okay, how many did you make yesterday? And he goes, like, 25. He goes, well, that's not enough. If you can do it every 10 minutes, we should be getting 6 an hour.
Right.
And so he pulls out the gun, tries to shoot him, and the gun doesn't go off. That kind of thing. Okay, because I saw somebody sitting in the post office a month ago, that means it's okay to fire everybody no matter what they do? I mean, I don't know.
No, I hear you, and I think it can be a very clearly a hot argument, right? People are certainly on both sides of it. But I am not upset that they're auditing and they're trying to just find this out to see kind of where it goes and where the bodies lie and who's been supporting themselves off of taxpayer money. Again, I go to the point, you work in Congress, you make $175,000 a year, but you have $100 million net worth. I don't understand how that happens.
Oh, that's a separate.
Okay, that might be a separate argument, but how is that happening?
I'll guarantee you what you just brought up. Yep. I'll guarantee you they never look at that.
Well, okay. They may not look at that. They should, but they may not look at that. But I think what they may do is they may bring a stop to it so it doesn't happen in the future, right?
Well,
I think they should actually look at every one of them. That, the guy from Rhode Island at White House, right? The NGO that his wife set up and that the money he funneled to her NGO, and she paid herself, $2 million a year as a salary. Really? At an NGO, you're paying yourself $2 million a year? Think about it for 1 minute. Just think about
it's like,
the
it's
weight.
Like a nonprofit. The same thing.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Well, what about, this is not new, what about Wendy Graham, who was the governance chairman of Enron, for God's sake?
Listen, I get it. I hear you. We could talk about a lot of them. But right now, we're talking about what's happening at Doge, right? I'm happy to talk about all of them. Right now, we're talking about what's happening.
What's the solution? Actually, I was in class with George Stigler after I left. Had nothing to do with me. Won a Nobel Prize, behavioral economist. And somebody asked a question about Chicago.
Yep.
And he says, okay, how can you get rid of the corruption in Chicago? And he goes, I can do it. And he goes, and the kid goes, what do you mean? He was, grad student. How would you do it? He says, you do the dumbest things. He says, you got an alderman that's making 10 grand a year. Because you don't want to pay anymore because you know he's stealing.
Yeah.
So, and then you're pissed when he's stealing. He goes, the mayor of the city of Chicago at the time was Richard Jay, was making, I believe, Kenny, 25, 30 grand a year.
Yeah.
He goes, the president of, no, this is back when salaries were different, he goes, the president of General Motors, or he named some company, is making 400 grand a year. He has less employees, less budget. He said, if I would, I could, I would give the mayor of the city of Chicago tomorrow, and this is 1970 something, I would give him $1 million salary, and I would put him, and I would give him 200 grand a year while he's here, and the rest goes in escrow. And as long as he stays clean and nothing comes up bad about his behavior as a mayor, he gets that for the rest of his life. As soon as he's convicted of anything, it's all gone. Because you got to make the job equal to the money. Now, why does a senator, what do they make, 150 a year or something, 250?
I think it's 175,000.
Yeah, so why isn't that job 2 million? And why don't they make as much as a crap outfielder, for God's sake? So the job is worth something. I mean, those guys get there, and the first thing they see is money flying out to everybody and everybody else getting rich but them.
100%.
Why should a guy like Paul Simon in Illinois, or a guy like Adlai Stevenson going back further, why does Paul Simon come back here making, at the time he's making 60 grand as a senator, needing two houses, comes back here and he goes to Charleston, Illinois, and teaches school at the local community college until he dies? I mean, the guy's got no dough. Neither did Stevenson. Well, Stevenson might have money from his dad, but why? You see what gets out there. Guys go to Congress, I believe, Kenny, and actually give a crap, most people. And somewhere along the line, in the House, after the two or three or four years terms, for you to actually get somewhere and start to do something, all of a sudden the contributions start to pile up. And somewhere, someplace in there, the people that hang for a while are all bought and paid for.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of money that is going out, I would say that when you see spending kind of crummy in January, February, I will bet you that a lot of that, especially in older people, is the fact they all got to pay their deductibles and their Part D and their Medicare. They actually got to pay $600, $590 or something it is, for their first, they got to pay for the first drugs. They don't have any money in January. How do you have any money if your Social Security check's $2,000, you just paid out $600?
Right.
I mean, the money is going places. I mean, all the stuff that these guys are doing, and I don't disagree with you at all. Any kind of efficiency anywhere is a good idea, but all this stuff is you have. Well, I'll bring it up because you brought it up. What if you find out that your treatment actually costs $500, and what you're paying for it, and the government's paying for it? Or if you're over 65, the government's paying for it. You can save, and they're doing it to how many million people? Or not many million, but how many thousand people? You save way more there than you ever can by throwing people out of America Radio, where the hell they threw out the other day. I mean, who are we kidding? We know where the money is. The big hole is in this, is in the drugs and med. And it, I mean, what is? I know a boatload of people that are on blood thinners, Eliquis, or what's the other one, Xarelto. Kenny, it costs $18 a year to make. The number is $7,500 for somebody.
I hear you.
How many times $1.8 million? How many people do you got to fire for that?
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you.
How many people you got to fire to get the $9 billion back we gave Musk?
Well, I guess we're going to find out, right?
It costs $3.4 million for Trump to go back and forth to Mar-a-Lago to play golf every weekend.
Right.
How many people is that? 28 people a weekend.
Well, listen, but you can say that about, you can say that about Joe Biden, too. You can say that about any president.
Well, I get it. Joe Biden was he was more a Camp David guy, wasn't he? Or he was at least in Delaware. Was he helicoptered? I'm not sure. How did he get back and forth? Did they have to, you take Air Force One to...
No, I think it's the helicopter to go to Camp David. It's only in Maryland.
But Biden went to the shore in Delaware. Was that an Air Force One thing? It probably was.
Probably was.
But he's not exactly my example.
I hear you. I think it's a long conversation we could have, and I think it's interesting.
But I also think there are people that, you know, there's the fence and then there's everyone on either side of it, right? People have a sense of what's right and what's wrong. And I'm not necessarily saying you throw everybody out, but I don't think auditing the system and finding out where there's really abuse, I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't either.
Matter of fact, I thought it was terrific when, you know, the numbers, I don't know if I showed you last week. We had, I'll dig through my notes here, but we had like three, I will find the page here. But the problem I have, Kenny, is everybody is on this thing emotionally instead of actually looking at the friggin' numbers. And that always bothers the hell out of me. When Clinton came into government, now you're right, the NGOs, I'd like to know whether there's more of those now than there was subcontractors, because if there's, you know, a million of those people out there, it certainly changes the numbers. I mean, I'm with you on that, but I don't know what those numbers are. I mean, they could be getting worse. They might always been this way. Anyway, when Clinton came into office, there was 3,092,000 federal employees.
Right.
When they left, there was 2,753. And they managed to get rid of 300,000 people without insulting them, without saying they didn't work, without saying that they were all, you know, working on the wrong stuff. But they got rid of 300,000 people. Every president since then, Bush hired 33,000. Yep. Obama, he was there, well, Bush there 8 years, hired 33,000. Obama hired roughly 30-some thousand. Trump hired 56,000 in 4 years, okay? So he was worse than these other guys. But then Biden has hired roughly 100-and-some thousand, so he was the worst in his 4 years by far. But we're still not up to the numbers as when Clinton walked in. Now, is there time again now, especially if these other guys, these NGO things are out there, is it time for somebody to take a concerted effort to see if there's too many people there, enact this 3 million number back down to 2.7 like Clinton did in a rational way with Congress involved and all those other kinds of things? You know, I'm with you 100%, 200%. Yeah. Now, but I'm also a guy of the process. Don't insult people. Don't bring in a guy who got, every time you and I bought a regular car, we sent him a check. Don't bring a guy in who got $9 billion to everybody else where we're wasting money. I just may. There's a way to do it. I guess, you know what, Kenny, nobody cares about the process, but I do. The process sets us apart of other people. We know he's dead. Just friggin' shoot him. Why have a trial? Because that's what we do, you know. If we want to go the other way, I understand why people go the other way. Why should we have a trial? Why do we have judges? Why do we have clerks? Why do we have all these people? Just shoot him. We all know he did it. But this is what we have been. Are we changing? If we are, okay. Maybe everybody wants to. And I'm a lone wolf. I don't know. It could be. I just think people deserve due process. Just saying. You know what? I bet at the end of the day, Kenny, you and I would fire more than these guys are. I just like to do it differently.
Well, okay, and that's fair enough, right? Do it differently than the way it kind of the way it came across. But one way or the other, I think you end up in the same position, right?
Because Congress, we would have Congress involved. Okay, here's the bill you guys sent, and you got all these programs. We want to take these 25 programs out. Congress should pass a bill tomorrow and take them out.
Well, okay, but let me ask you a question. But I think what's going to happen is they've identified all this waste in terms of the NGOs. They've just halted it until they do an analysis on it. Isn't that how I understand it?
No, these people are gone.
We figure out what's going on.
These people are gone.
Well, no, people are gone from the government jobs. I'm talking about the money that they're giving to NGOs, right? Like that money to Stacey Abrams that they gave her for those new. They just halted those payments until they audit what she's doing. And where did this money go? And was it legitimate? And if it is, then they're happy to put her back on the list. But if it isn't, if they find that it's been wasteful and fraudulent, then they're not going to give her the money back.
I don't disagree. But we're gonna have to pick out, we have to make sure we put in the headlights somebody we don't like, somebody who's probably a Democrat. Like there's no Republicans stealing?
No, of course there's. I have to do it on both sides. I'm going to say
that's not happening.
Well, it may not happen this time, but the minute it becomes a Democrat in office, you know it's going to happen then.
Yeah, I don't. Well, yeah, it's. Anyway, Bud, what the market here? Are you worried or not?
The market is. Listen, I don't think, and I was on TV last week, you know, that Stuart Varney said to me, do you expect a V-shaped recovery? I don't expect a V-shaped recovery at all. I think there's more volatility ahead. I think it lasts until we get into like early spring, you know, through the end of this first quarter anyway, into past tax day is, I think, when you might
see it start to settle down. But I don't think we're nearly out of the woods yet. I think there's been a lot of damage done internally to the market, and it needs to, in order to repair itself, it kind of needs to thrash around a little bit and test, you know, the lows that we created last week or a week and a half ago down at 55.04. I wouldn't be surprised if we test that again, right, at some point. I'm not saying today, but I wouldn't be surprised if we test it again. Just because of the speed at which we went down there, there's a lot of technical levels that were broken that just need to be repaired. And the only way you're going to do that is by thrashing around a little bit and building new support. That's how you're going to do it. And I think that's
going to. I want to ask you. Maybe we'll tee us up next week. You know, Hal's listening because I'm going to continue on with him with this. But Kyle brought up an interesting point this morning, and he's like to dig through this stuff because whatever, he's good at it. You ever hear about a site called USAspending.gov?
I've never seen it. I've heard of it, but I've never actually visited.
I've actually heard of it too. I've never been there either. But we're not the only people have. If you look at the MTFs, the monthly treasury statement, and you look at the deficit, which is we've gone through what we're $1.2 trillion on the deficit after 5 months. Yet a new record, right? But if you look at the MTS, the monthly treasury statements, and you look at the debtclock.org, the debt is going up faster. Now, I know there's intergovernmental debt where one owes the other, and it's not really counted. I mean, I would love to be able to have somebody tell me how that works, but some of the debt that the government, quote, owes is owed to them by other departments in the government or something, so the number isn't exactly 100% correct. But it seems to me, and other people that have been on the show, they actually watch the thing, or listeners, they write in, how come the debt is going up faster? In other words, last year, what's the number, Ken? We were going up $1 trillion every 3.5 months or something?
Yeah.
On the debt. And yet, if you look at the total monthly treasury statement last year, our total deficit was, what, $1.7 trillion, $1.8 trillion? Well, those numbers don't match, right? So the question is, what's the difference? Now, some of it might be the interagency stuff, like I said, but Carl said this USspending.gov, the numbers there out of the Treasury are way higher than the Treasury statement that they're actually spending. How can that be? And what if it's true? What if we actually have to, especially since we seem to be pissing off people that invest here from other countries, what if we actually got to go out and get all this debt domestically? What's that going to do to spending, for God's sake?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure yet, but we're going to find out for sure, right?
Do you think that there's that big of a leak that the numbers we're getting are not the real numbers? I can't believe that.
Question all the numbers. I don't really necessarily believe any of the numbers are correct, right? Because you see that all the time in revisions that come down, right? That they're falsified. I'm just saying I don't think the first round of numbers are correct at all because we're constantly seeing revisions. So it's difficult to say to accept any number on a first glance because next week it's going to be revised or next month it's going to be revised. So I think you have to kind of understand the trend before you start making all kinds of decisions.
Well,
right?
if I was on TV like you are, I would have a real problem essentially bitching a blue streak at the CPI numbers. Are all crap yet? Because I couldn't make the determination that last month instead of 0.3% increase it should have been 0.6 or 0.7. I don't have the access to the numbers, but I can tell you that easily that over the last 8, 10, 12, 15, 20 years, where they say we're up, prices should be doubled, and I look and see they're up by 5 times. I can certainly say with absolute certainty that somewhere along the line, somewhere there's an oopsie in here, right? I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you look at the numbers from 2000. What should it be like? 1.8. It's actually we can name 5 things that are up 5%. 5 times for God's sake: education, taxes, medical stuff. You name it. So somewhere along the line, there's a problem. Housing. I don't know where it is. I mean, I can't debate this month and say you guys screwed up this month. The price of rice is really 4%, and you got down here 1%. I can't debate that, but over a period of time, I look at it and say somewhere along the line there's an agenda here.
Yeah. No, 100%.
I think that's where you come from. You and I would want to sit there and debate the guy from the CPI over the last month, but we can certainly say, hey, buddy, over the last 7 years, you got X, and this car used to be 20 and now it's 40. Where are you getting it's up 5%?
Yeah.
I mean, right or wrong. I mean, what about medical stuff? Christ. I mean, it's not even close. If you can find somebody. You know, anyway. I mean, who are you on with this week? You know, some of the stuff you sent me, I can't open. We have to figure out a way where I can...
Why? It comes from my same Substack every month, every day.
No, I mean, I always get your newsletters and stuff, but some of the things of when you're on TV and stuff, I have trouble opening.
Yeah. I got to figure that out. Yeah, figure that out.
Because I want to see the gestures. I can hear the voice, but I want to see the gestures.
Yeah, I'm on tomorrow. Liz claimed because it's Fed Day, so I'll be on tomorrow at 3:30. By the time he gets done with the press conference.
If you get a second, tell her you know a guy. Me, she was always my favorite by far. I thought she was terrific. It still is.
Yeah.
Good luck with that, buddy.
All right,
SP Futures down 17. NASDAQ Futures down 17. What do you say we write to Hal, and then we'll have our break at the bottom of the hour. Is that fair, Ricky?
Sounds good.
Hal, you with us? Where'd we lose
him? Yeah, hey, what's up, Tom?
Nothing. Say, sorry for running over, bud.
Oh, it's all right. I enjoyed the conversation.
It's, you know, it's interesting. You know, what are the guys? The guy on a board with me in the CBOE, we don't know where we're going, but we're well on our way.
Well, I'll tell you, if you want to know where we're going, I shared this book with you yesterday in the email chain that we have. And it's written by Rose Wilder Lane, and it's the history of the 99% through the beginning of history, from the beginning of history through like the 1930s. And I'll tell you, it's a fascinating read because you really understand. I mean, most history books are written from the perspective of the victors, right? And the victors being the ruling class, the merchant class. But this book is written from the perspective of the 99%ers. And, you know, just 100 years ago, 99% of the world's population lived at the level where they'd pick up a crumb and eat it on the street, or they'd pick up cigarette butts and pull the tobacco out of cigarette butts discarded on the street and then recycle it into a full cigarette. That we're about 120 years from that.
That's what your buddy Malthus wrote about, right?
And then if you compare just an average poor person with maybe a car, with electricity, with plumbing, a cell phone, that person's standard of living is far greater, far superior than General George Washington, one of the wealthiest Americans at the time. I mean, the guy, if he wanted to get anywhere, he had to walk.
Well, he didn't have any teeth.
You know why he didn't have teeth and hair? It's because he didn't eat any vegetables and fruit.
Some people, he was malnourished. Some people just have bad teeth.
Well, I know, but I mean, he never ate vegetables. He never ate fruit. The only thing he really had were, you know, meat and starch. That was it. And then in his house, what do you have? He kept his house warm with logs, and he read by firelight or candlelight or whale oil light, right? So we talk about poverty in the sense that we compare people who are impoverished today to the wealthiest people. What we really need to do is look at how just the average poor person lives in America today and compare it to the richest person just 100 years ago. And there is no comparison.
Well, you can't compare life before a cell phone or life before penicillin with life after.
Well, I mean, think about what the cell phone has done. The cell phone has eliminated probably 20, 30, 40 products that you don't need anymore. You don't need an alarm clock. You don't need a TV. I mean, if you're not
I'm never going to watch TV on my cell phone. I know people do that. It's not going to be me.
Oh, young people do.
I can't. Young people do a lot of things. I was young once. Yeah. I remember.
Yeah. But just your cell phone alone has revolutionized the world. I mean, just that little thing, because you have access to a library that Queen Elizabeth I couldn't even imagine.
So how come young people I know now know half as much as what people did in my era when you actually had to go to school and learn it?
Yeah, well, you know, maybe you don't need to know that to be successful in today's world.
Boy, I don't know about that.
You just have to know how to retrieve the information.
Well, you know, I guess we could we can sort of go down that road, but I seem to...
I mean, think about this. My colleague, a former colleague of mine at A&T, she's now a full professor out in Tennessee at Austin P University. She told me that they just bought a Tesla, and she jumps in the car, and it drives her. It knows who she is when she sits down, and it knows where she's going to probably go. And she just sits behind the wheel, and it drives her to her work. So she's being chauffeured. In 10 years, guess what? Every American, the poorest to the richest, are going to be chauffeured around in these kind of cars.
Why does everybody always think this is all going to happen, then it never does? I don't...
Well, you know what?
I don't trust that. First of all, there is no such thing right now as a car that she doesn't have to be aware of.
No, she says she gets behind the car, and the car drives itself with her sitting in the driver's seat.
But she can't fall asleep.
Well, she's not going to fall asleep.
Okay, but I'm saying a driverless car means you get in and say, take me someplace, and you start, you know, talking to the buddy next to you. That's not happening.
But think about this. In the 1970s, who had a cell phone? In the 80s, who had a cell phone?
Well, in the 80s, nobody, people started
getting... Except really rich people.
They had car
Gordon
phones.
Gekko had one. Yeah.
I know people
Gordon
that,
Gekko had one. Yeah.
I knew
the police had them.
I knew people that had cell phones or car phones early, guys that were salesmen on the road all the time. They paid up for it. It was a lot of
money.
Well,
yeah, but I'm pretty sure the corporation probably put that cell phone in the car.
How is it that I was able to have...
Hey, remember that episode of Beverly Hillbillies where Jethro Bodine puts a car phone in the old truck?
Oh, I didn't see that one. I can only imagine.
Yeah, he had a 500-foot-long cord from the house.
God. And I still think that, you know, I look at my parents' generation and even there before them, and seems like even your remedial schools, matter of fact, I read this on the Quora thing where when Harry Truman became president, and, you know, he was considered a, you know, bumpkin from Missouri, and did Winston Churchill, who was, you know, pretty much an intellectual, did he look down on him? And the answer was no. People forget how good, even in places like Missouri, primary education was for people in terms of reading and arithmetic and civics and those kinds of things. Even if you left school at 16, you knew all that. And Harry Truman was a voracious reader, probably in the same class as Churchill. So they were actually intellectual equals, even though one guy went to a rural school in Missouri.
Yeah, and then you got President Lincoln, who didn't go to college, and he was able to get his law degree, right?
Well, nobody did. You just worked for a lawyer for a while, right? Yeah. Did you ever read stuff about that guy? He was...
He was a railroad lawyer before he became president.
He was a huge railroad lawyer for the Illinois Central.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, the case...
His story is fascinating because, you know, he's... You know, like a lot of most Americans at the time, he grew up on a dirt floor of a house, right?
But he had one of the most, I mean, you're not into, you know, guys' bodies. He had one of the most amazing physical structures of, like, anybody. Something was, like, really wrong, I mean, unusual about him. He was, like, 6'4". I don't think he was 200 pounds. Yet the guy's arms and upper body were amazingly strong. He wrestled guys way bigger than him. He only lost one.
Well, I think it's because when he was a kid, he probably did a lot of manual labor with logs.
But a lot of those guys did. I mean, but I'm saying there was somebody who said on the railroad he did the work of two men.
Yeah,
absolutely did the work of two men. And
today if he was born today, he'd be in the NBA rocking the rim.
Well, the guy who did the autopsy on him said, "I've never seen a physique like this. His arms, he's got no chest, and his arms are like a gorilla, for God's sake."
Yeah, but my father, when he was a kid, you know, in Idaho, you can't rely on the rain to irrigate your crops like you can in the Midwest. In Idaho, you have to move hand pipe. And the pipes my dad had to move from the time he was like 13 until I think he was still working for my grandfather at 26 with a wife and four kids. He was still moving a hand pipe when he was 26. And my dad would literally pick these pipes up that were 30 feet long, filled with water. He didn't want to wait for the water to drain. He just wanted to get it done quick. He'd pick these pipes up full of water, and he told me he'd run across the field 30 feet with a 30-foot pipe, 20-foot pipe maybe, with water pouring out on both ends, drop it and hook it up, and then sprint back, and he would sprint to get these lines moved.
Wow.
He had these guns on him that were incredible.
Well, when you worked that way, my grandfather was a boilermaker. 78, a year before he died, he'd wake up in the morning and do 20 chin-ups.
Yeah.
Name me anybody who can do 20 chin-ups, much less people that are 78.
I can't do 20 chin-ups.
I don't think I ever. But, you know, it's one of a real quick Lincoln story about being a lawyer. You might know this. You're a history bluff. Who had the first bridge over the Mississippi River?
Who did what?
Who built the first bridge over the Mississippi River?
I don't know.
Well, it was a railroad.
Maybe a railroad?
Yeah, the Chicago, Rock Island, and Pacific.
Yeah.
So they build this bridge, and of course, the steamship operators are outraged, right? What are we doing with this bridge? That's like our job. So sure enough, one night, the steamship guy runs into the bridge and wrecks the bridge. So there's this big trial over, like, who was at fault? And Lincoln, I guess, was the lawyer for the Rock Island.
Oh, wow.
And they put the captain up there, and he's talking about the thing was in his way and blah, blah, blah. And Lincoln said, I have only one question. Did the bridge move to hit you, or did you hit the bridge? You moved to hit the bridge. The guy looks at him like he's got four heads. He goes, well, the bridge didn't move. So, okay, you moved. You hit the bridge. The bridge didn't move and hit you. Well, no. He goes, I rest my case.
Hey, you know, there was a during the Great Depression, I read this little history in Rose Wilder Lang's book. Apparently, you know, people were unemployed, and this guy and his son, a 12-year-old son, there was this need for a bridge across the Snake River on the eastern side of Idaho. And this county wouldn't authorize it because they estimated it to be $50,000, which is a lot of money at the time. So this guy goes over to Wyoming to a scrap heap, gets a bunch of scrap metal. Him and his son, 12-year-old son, mind you, build this bridge across Snake River. It ended up only costing $4,000. The farmers gave him $2,000, and he netted. Well, the farmers gave him $2,000, I think, for parts, and he ended up earning $2,000 for building this bridge.
Wow!
And the bridge ended up costing just $4,000 total, which is way below what the county had estimated. And state inspectors inspected it, and they judged it to be a quality bridge.
Do you believe the pictures of some of those wooden trestle bridges they built?
Oh, yeah. Well, you can still walk on many of them in Idaho, in the mountains, and over, like, these.
Some of the stuff they did for the railroads.
Yeah.
By the way, if you...
Well, you see those wooden ones
yeah.
where, you know, out west, you know, the mountains are so up and down that you have to, you know, you blow a hole through the mountain to create a tunnel, but then when you get out of the tunnel, you have to build a bridge to the other mountain.
Yeah, the other tunnel.
Yeah, so those wooden bridges are still up in northern Idaho. They're pretty amazing.
They were amazingly over-engineered. You would have to be to put a locomotive on top of wood.
And they're made of wood.
Hey, you know what today is? We're going to go to break here, but I don't know what kind of show we got today going. We're talking about different stuff. You know what today is the anniversary of? 100th anniversary of?
What's that?
One of the most destructive events ever in America. The Tri-State Tornado.
Oh, really? Wow.
Started the afternoon of March 18th, 1925, near Ellington, Missouri. About 4 hours, a storm raced along a track of over 200 miles, decimating parts of Missouri, Illinois, Indiana. Came with no warning. It was a tornado that pretty much stayed down. 695 people dead.
Wow.
2,000 people.
It might have been maybe not, because I think the Wizard of Oz was written in the 1890s. So I was thinking maybe it was the inspiration for the Wizard of Oz. Well, you know that 90%, roughly 90% of all tornadoes in the world happen east of the Rocky Mountains because of the cool air that comes down from the north and mixes with the warmer air of the Gulf of Mexico. 90%, roughly, of all tornadoes on the planet.
That track has shifted south the last 10 years for some reason.
Yeah.
It used to be all... Because Russell, our guest tomorrow, he and his daughter, she was really into meteorology, and he went for a week, and they were chasing tornadoes, and they were in Nebraska and Oklahoma, and there was a storm, they'd race for it, and he said it was absolutely fascinating. I mean, but now it seems like they've shifted a little south. But this thing, nothing's ever been like this. And the weird part is, it followed like a train line the whole way.
Wow.
But I mean, town after town after town.
The worst tornado my family, my wife and I have been in was when we were living in Brownsville, North Carolina. And a tornado, if you looked at it on the radar, it was tracking right for us, headed right for us. But it hit the lake at the golf course that was southwest of us. And it kind of disrupted the tornado. And then it went over our house, probably, I don't know, 100 feet over our house. And then it retouched down like a mile or two east of us. So that was the closest call we ever had.
We had one that came within a mile of our house where we lived at the time, and it went right over where we moved afterward.
Well,
it came from the southwest, at Oaklawn High School, at Beverly Country Club here. By any measurement, the destruction it caused, property loss of life, injuries, or size, length of path, forward speed, has never been matched in climate history. The thing was, I think it was like 60 miles an hour it was going.
And that was 100 years ago.
Yeah.
That was 100 years. That was before the SUV. The SUV that Senator Kelly purchased. He purchased one for D.C. and purchased one for Arizona. So I've been tweeting on X that I'm going to worry about climate change when the Democrats move out of their beachfront properties like the Obamas, and when Senator Kelly stops buying SUVs.
Well, the
I'm not too worried about it until then.
No, it's 60 to 70 miles an hour was the speed.
Wow. Yeah. Was that the speed? That was the speed of it moving, the funnel.
That was the funnel moving along the ground.
Yeah. Wow, that is
fast. What do you say, we got a break? S&P futures down 17, NASDAQ futures down 92. Come back. I was talking about Kenny and Carol. These numbers we're getting on deficits, we keep discovering that maybe the numbers are bigger. We'll see where you stand on that. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here. Right now.
Hello, Rick. Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Ricky on the board. Mr. Traffic Ricky on the board. Cheer up. It's only going to be till January, Ricky.
Man, I can't even tell you how heavy it is today, man. But, I mean, we're going to get to that in just a second, right?
Yeah, you know what? My computer seems to have conked here. Why don't you do that now, and I'll come back to that stuff. S&P futures up 19. NASDAQ futures down 19. NASDAQ futures down 97. We got gold up. We'll come back. We'll come back there. Why don't you do your stuff first?
Absolutely, Chief. It's 7:41 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 46 degrees right now with a high of 68. Becoming windier and warmer with clouds and sun tonight. Tonight will be breezy, otherwise mild with increasing clouds with a low of 54 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 61 degrees right now with a high of 72. Not as warm with plenty of sunshine. Tonight will be clear and cool with a low of 48 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, we're looking at 41 minutes. Inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 75 minutes. Inbound Eden's from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 47 minutes. Another 47 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th. Lastly, we're looking at 41 minutes. Inbound Stevenson from 24 to the Dan Ryan. So if you're commuting to the city or out of the city today, it's going to take a little longer than usual. Let's talk about sports a little bit. Yesterday, the Bulls beat Utah Jazz 111-97, and Suns beat Raptors 129-89. Today we got Kraken at Blackhawks at 7:30 p.m. right here at the United Center. Yesterday, we got Diamondbacks losing to both matches that they had in the spring training yesterday. Royals beat them 12-1 and the Angels 11-5. White Sox also lost to Giants 0-3. And today, we have the Dodgers-Cubs game. It was live by the time we started, and I actually have to go and check back to see if the score has changed. Give me just 1 second.
Yeah, the Cubs are up. It started at 5 a.m.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's the top eighth right now, and it looks like Dodgers are winning it 3-1 as of right now. Back over to you guys.
Well, the Cubs aren't that good. The Dodgers are.
Yeah.
What can I tell you? Two things, Carl. Maybe you can explain to us. Well, first I want to talk about the deficits here and the amount of, well, let's put it this way, the amount of time is being spent on stuff what I think is not a whole lot of it. Doesn't mean it shouldn't be done. But where the money really is going here, and the money is really piling out into the medical area. But what do you make of what's going on in Europe here? How's this going to interplay? Partially, I don't think we've done all of it. Partially, we've been banging the drums about the people in Europe spending more on defense, and Germany evidently is going to do that now. But they have their fiscal plan. Now, again, those guys, they're an influential part of the EU, but they don't control the money supply. European Central Bank does. Now, granted, they've got, I think, big-time influence, but they don't really control it like Fed does, like we do our Fed, or they're supposed to be independent, but I'll take the under on that. But they came out today with some plan saying they're getting rid of their normal balance budget stuff with the ability to spend more and go off the rails, basically, for defense spending, infrastructure, and basically anything else they feel like doing. So they're going to go into a deficit situation over there, which, unless they start taxing people, which I don't know if they're going to, they're going to essentially want European Central Bank to expand the money supply to help them out, for lack of a better term. What is the interplay there between the ECB and the Germans? I mean, the Germans are a big part of it, but how do you see that working its way through?
That's hard. I think it's going to be hard to pull off, because imagine if there was no treasury auctions in the federal government, and each state in our union issued deficits, paid for deficits with their own bond issues, right? Who's going to get what? Is California going to get 80% of the central bank to purchase those California bonds? That's the problem with the European Union, is who's going to be able to run the biggest deficit.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Does Germany have any ability to issue bonds?
These countries issue bonds, and the ECB buys the bonds.
Okay.
From the member nations. So how are they going to allocate that? I think it's a really hard problem to coordinate.
Well, that's why I'm asking. That's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to do it. I mean, and can you imagine the fighting that would be going on between California and New York and Illinois? Who would want to run huge deficits and have the Federal Reserve purchase those bonds? I mean, they'd be fighting over it, wouldn't they?
Even if they issued more money,
yeah,
how would they funnel it to Germany?
Well, they would just purchase Germany's bonds, right? The Bund. They just purchased the Bund.
Okay, well, here's the scoop, and it's an article written by Sophie Kitterlin. I don't know if we've done anything of hers before, but this is pretty well written. Germany's Bundestag, which is that's their parliament, right, is set to vote on a major fiscal package on Tuesday. It includes changes to the longstanding debt break rule, whatever that is, and a 500 billion euro billion infrastructure and climate fund. The package needs a two-thirds majority in parliament, as well as the Bundesnet, whatever that is. The Bundesrat. Bundesrat is different than the Bundestag. I should be better at this than German stuff, but it says the more than two-thirds parliament is needed to support the package in order for it to pass and become enshrined in Germany's constitution, because it's a constitutional change.
Yeah.
Because they evidently, whenever they got to spend too much money, there's a constitutional break on spending, and now they're saying they're going to take the break off. Yeah. Under the proposed new laws, defense and certain security expenditures, which I'm sure can be in anybody's mind, above a certain threshold would no longer be subject to the debt break, which limits how much debt the government can take on and dictates the size of the federal government's structural budget deficit. Loans taken on as part of the infrastructure fund would also be exempt the debt break, while German states would have greater flexibility around debt. Now, if they're just going to go out, we talk about it all the time now, and I don't know if I get anywhere with it, but if they're just going to go out and borrow more dough, my guess is they can probably do that, right? Germany.
Well, they're going to be able to do that because probably the European Union, the European Central Bank is probably going to buy a lot of it, right?
Well, that's. But if they do that, then they're really increasing the money supply, which is what we did here, which becomes inflationary and does all the other stuff.
Which really helps Trump out, because they're going to devalue the euro. It sounds like they're going to devalue the euro.
Yeah, but we're,
and that'll, we're, that'll mean it'll be, well, actually, the opposite of that, right?
Except that we're our debt here is going to the moon too. So we're doing the same thing here.
But the key question is the Fed going to keep up with the European Union?
The way the dollar has been going down the last few weeks, I think they're more than keeping up with it.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing's been pretty orchestrated, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing, right? They don't want to give up their social safety nets. So what they're going to do is they're going to turn to inflation. They're going to print money so they can finance, I guess, the next world war. I mean, the Europeans are famous for world wars. I did a little research. I call a world war something with more than four nations in it. And if you go back to the Hundred Years' War and the Seven Years' War, those wars involved, you know, 4 to 15 nations. So the Europeans are very good at world war. So I guess they want to be able to finance their own world war. And we're kind of like preventing them from, you know, launching the third world war. So they're not giving up their social safety nets. They're going to unleash the printing presses, apparently, so they can have...
I'll bet you there's been... The social safety net has been cut back some.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, here's the funny thing. Remember what I said about Trump leveraging crazy to move the Overton window? 2 years ago, there's no way that the Europeans are going to put more money into NATO, right? They're not going to spend more on their defense.
I don't think that's true at all. They increased their contributions every one of Biden's years. I mean, Trump can say what he wants, but you can't change history.
What I'm saying, though, is Trump wants them to maybe pay for the majority of their own defense. So he's leveraging all this crazy. And what is the result? Canada is upping, I think, their defense spending. We cover Canada's defense for the most part. So Canada's upping, it sounds like they're upping their defense spending. The Europeans are upping their defense spending. Maybe that's what Trump wants. Maybe that's why he's leveraging this.
Yeah, but maybe, I mean, I understand where they're heading with this, okay? And there's a...
Do I agree with it? No, I'm just saying Trump leverages crazy to move the political Overton window.
Okay, but...
That would previously not be possible.
I don't know if you met him when you were in town that one time. You met some of the guys from the Fed, didn't you?
No.
I thought you did. Anyway, this guy's...
Well, we popped in with the motorhome, and we had it parked at that big... parking lot where the trucks park overnight for like $35.
Yeah, but you were hanging. You had a few cocktails with us, I recall.
Well, I think I was with the family. We went to a pizza place that night. Yeah, we went to a German restaurant that
you
night.
You did, but you were there for a little bit. Anyway, this dude is...
I might have. I don't remember. My wife has got a much better memory than me.
Hey, I got a story for you before I get into this one. Remember Humphrey Bogart evidently used to like to drink some? Well, his first wife thought he was cheating on her, which he wasn't. So she hires a private investigator to follow him. So evidently, you know, he of course spotted the guy, and the guy's tailing him around. So one night he calls the head of the detective agency, or he called the head of the detective agency, or he called his wife, one of the two, and said, "I know you got a guy tailing me. How about he tells me where I am?"
Did he use that Humphrey Bogart voice?
I'm sure he did. How about he tells me where I am? I think I'm lost at some bar. God. Anyway, where was I going with it? But, you know, we were talking about, you know, he's a big German history kind of thing. And he was, you know, and now he's Mr. Right Wing. And he's talking about, you know, these guys should be, you know, paying this and everything. I said, okay, guy's name is Robert. I said, Robert.
He works at the Fed?
He's just retiring. Matter of fact, the guy's a genius on international settlements, you know, which is really the Fed's primary job is making sure. I mean, we think the primary job is the political part. It isn't. It's making sure every time somebody writes a check, it gets where it's supposed to go, and every time you buy a euro dollar from some place, that it clears with a bank in Europe and doesn't all blow up. I mean, the workings of the system is what 95% of what the Fed does. And without that, I think we'd all be in a bleep creek without a paddle, basically. Anyway, but that's what... He was in front of Congress. At one point, it was one of his ideas or the guys around him. When they started doing this Dodd-Frank on the banking stuff...
Yeah.
The banks didn't want to take deposits. Because if they did, if it was considered fast money... they didn't want to take the deposit because they needed more net capital, which is about as dumb as you can get, right? So the exchanges, or the clearing corps, sometimes have $300-500 million extra overnight, and they would have to put it someplace. Well, where are you supposed to put money in a bank, right? So, but the banks wouldn't take it. Like even J.P. Morgan, you know, what's his name? He'd say, "We're not taking it." Jamie Dimon, we'll go right up to him. So, what use is a bank, Hal, if they won't lend you any money? And by the way, you can't put money in there. What isn't that what they're supposed to do? So, what he did was he and these other guys, they said they gave the clearing corps access to the Fed directly. So if they had, you know, $600 million, everybody just happened to be paying cash, paying for stocks that day or whatever, they could actually put the money in the Fed and not have to go into a bank. But this caused a change in what the regulations. So he's sitting in front of Congress, right? And I got it on YouTube, and it's hilarious. First, I was giving him crap about his suit. So where'd you buy the Undertaker suit? this black suit, white shirt, black tie. I'm going, you look like an Undertaker.
Hey, that's my style.
So he's sitting there. You know how when guys are sitting in the big chair, like in the middle,
yeah,
there's always people behind him? You know, yeah, you know, they got all their aides, you know, saying, you know, telling them what to say and stuff. He's there all by himself.
Wow.
I go, Robert, where is everybody? He goes, it was just me. And he goes, there's this huge panel of dudes up there all firing questions at him. And I go, did any of those guys know any idea what you were talking about? And he goes, the chairman knew, and his one staffer was pretty up to speed. He was pretty smart. He goes, the rest of the guys, I could have been talking to mice. You know, I mean, it was...
They're reading their questions.
Yeah, they had no idea what we were trying to do or why or whatever. And but the chairman did know. He had some idea. But I was asking him, he's German, and he's... Boy, talk about knowing German history.
German American.
Well, yeah, but he's from, his family's from there. Obviously, he's got the name, you know, the German name, and I go.
Does he still have the German accent?
Little bit, actually.
Wow.
But he's
an American citizen, right?
Yeah, he was a Long Island cop, an attorney.
Oh wow!
All kinds of stuff. Talk about a character. Yeah. Matter of fact, who did he say?
He's probably a pretty tough dude.
Yeah, he said that he. He was in a squad car, and somebody's limousine, was it Farrah Fawcett's limousine, conked out, and he had to give a ride to the airport?
Oh, that's cool.
He said, he was, boy, was she a doll. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, I had a crush on her when I was...
Oh, God. Great. But anyway, I said, Robert, where did we go from, I'm not adverse, you know, to having the European people contribute more to their defense. I said, but 20 years ago, if Germany would have said, we're going to have a 10-division army, and Japan was going to say, we're going to go get a bunch of bombers in our own navy. Yeah. We didn't want that.
Yeah.
After fighting two wars against... We wanted that. We wanted to be in charge.
Well, you know, the best way to fight this war with Iran and Russia is just to unleash drilling in the United States, lower the cost of pulling oil out of the ground, which, when you do that, just lowering the cost, right? Getting rid of the regulations.
Right, don't,
is an increase in supply.
Don't sound like Trump, because
maybe all these people who want this war to go on in Ukraine. How about instead of giving all these bombs to Ukraine, how about we do this? How about we voluntarily raise the gasoline tax and the natural gas tax to slow demand, which will push prices down. It'll green the environment. If you are in favor of policies that limit the amount of CO2 released into the atmosphere, we can win that war.
CO2 is not a poison.
Well, I know. No, I'm Tom, I'm talking to the people who believe it, not you. So we can green the environment. We can reduce the CO2. We can drive the crude oil prices and the natural gas price down to the break-even of Russia. And the break-even barrel for Russia is about $50 a barrel. We'd have to pay higher taxes. But guess what? We green the environment. We have less CO2 in the atmosphere. Russia doesn't have the money. Iran doesn't have the money to finance the wars. They have to seek peace. That, to me, sounds like a better idea.
But please, don't sound like a president who I think knows... He wants to drill, baby, drill, so the price comes down. The reason why we're doing 13.6 million barrels a day is because the price of oil is $68.
Yeah, but see, Tom, what you're missing here is the cost of complying with regulations. Removing those costs in itself.
What regulations are we talking about?
Well, just what I'm talking about is reducing the litigation, all the stuff that prevents people from going out and searching for oil. If you get rid of all those rules and regulations,
I don't think
that in itself.
I don't really buy that. I think it's the industry is bigger than all that, and the reason why we're doing what we're doing, we're not going to unleash drilling so people.
I'm not saying we're going to increase the number of wells, but what we'll do is we'll change the marginal cost of pulling that last barrel of oil out of the ground, which is an increase in supply.
I don't think we're affecting that. I don't think we're affecting the fracking at all. The reason why we're doing 13.6 million barrels a day is because of the advances in fracking. I haven't heard anything that's stopping those guys from doing that. Have you?
Well, all I'm saying is there's a way to end this war, and the way to end the war is to reduce the cost of pulling the last barrel out of the ground, which is an increase in supply, which will help pull the prices down. And then on top of that, you slap on a tax. You know, all those people with the blue and yellow flags on Twitter, they could pay a higher tax for gasoline, for natural gas. That will dampen demand. That will help pull down prices. It'll green the planet, and we'll have less CO2 in the atmosphere.
Well,
and Russia and Iran won't have the money to finance their wars
anymore. I think we have, in the last 20 years, we've gained so much power. When Bush was in office, we were doing 4 million barrels a day. Now we're doing 13. Yeah. That's why Saudi, nobody cares if they go up or down on their supply anymore. Because we're doing it. We're doing it here. I mean, the idea that people are going to drill more and drive the price down shows me that we have a president that never took economics 101. The reason we're doing 13.6.
But Tom, you got to admit, when the government slaps on all kinds of rules and regulations,
what rules are you talking about?
There's compliance. The whole industry is regulated heavily.
Well, okay, like it doesn't mean it's detracting from much. Where is it detracting from? These guys are doing whatever they want.
But it's not like a free market. Energy is not a free market. These oil companies love these regulations and restrictions because it keeps their older wells profitable because the price of a barrel is higher than it would be otherwise. So they probably love
I used to go to these money shows and speak for the CBOE, and when I wasn't speaking, I would go from booth to booth, and there were all kinds of people in the oil industry, you know, trying to get money from people to invest. And I would head back with pamphlets from probably 10 or 15 places and actually read them on the plane. The oil industry is fascinating. And not one of those pamphlets did they say there was a governmental issue. It was usually, the issue generally was, we think there's oil out here. By the way, there's no road, there's no railroad, there's no pipeline. How the hell do we get anywhere? Even if we... there was one outfit that was... how long ago this was? I think it was Standard Oil of Indiana discovered the thing in like 1957. Yeah, and it was somewhere, I think it was either in Washington State or somewhere in Alaska. It had changed hands probably 6 times up until when this was all happening in the 80s or something, when we went to see maybe the 90s. And now finally some road was going to come close enough where they might actually be able to drill. It had nothing to do with the regulation.
Tom, at this point, I think it's still illegal to even look for crude oil off the West Coast. And there's so much crude oil underneath
ocean. Okay, but now you start talking about, you know, putting oil...
And it leaks out. Well, it leaks out. The amount of oil, the biggest CO2 contributor to the atmosphere is the natural seepage of crude oil bursting through the ground into the oceans and being released into the atmosphere. There's so much of it that it pollutes.
Well, it depends on where you want to go with the regulations.
California.
I don't think the industry... Now, if you're talking about if somebody wants to build an oil derrick in Grant Park, and says, no, I guess you can call that a regulation, and somehow we're screwing the guy, but there needs to be some limit on something. People don't want oil there, you know.
Okay, so we don't go after the supply. Let's go after the demand. Let's reduce the demand. I mean, the liberals, the progressives, want gasoline, well, they did until this week. They want gas-powered vehicles replaced by electric vehicles. Well, let's start the process. Let's green the planet. Let's put less CO2 in the atmosphere. Let's put a green the planet, end the wars in Iran and Russia by taxing gas and natural gas and crude oil.
That's a hard way to get there. What do you make of... All right, we can run over a couple of minutes. I got to ask you this other question. Yeah. We can talk about this forever. But yeah. Wait, when are we going to start taxing electric vehicles, Elon's son?
Yeah.
You don't think we should do that?
Hey, but the left doesn't want to tax electric vehicles.
I don't care who you are. If you've got a road use tax and they're not paying it and they're using the road, I don't care.
Well, you know,
people accuse me of being on the left, which I'm not. Yeah. Why would I ever want those guys to go free?
Yeah, if we're going to tax road use, then electric vehicles should be taxed more because they weigh more.
Well, I understand that. Right now, they're nothing. Hey, what do you make of what Carl came up with regarding the is our deficit actually a lot bigger than they're showing?
Well, I think are we talking about what the CBO is estimating and what the Treasury is reporting? Is that what we're talking about?
Well, we're talking about the two things. One is the monthly Treasury statement that Greg Pappas noticed. Our debt seems to be, what are we going up $1 trillion every, what, 100 and some days? And if you look at the number on the monthly Treasury statement, our deficit's not that big. Now, there's some interplay between some government agencies versus the big deficit. But now, Carl just came up with this USASavings.gov, spending.gov site, which the numbers are appreciably different, and this is a government site, than the monthly Treasury statement. What the hell?
Well, There's a difference between the U.S. Treasury numbers and then the CBO and the White House Management Office and budget. I mean, there's differences, right? And a lot of those differences are, you know, like when is the interest calculated? Or what? Maybe they're using forecast to generate these calculations. And anytime you're using statistics from a forecast, it's going to alter the calculations.
Well,
a lot of it probably has to do with timing. A lot of it probably has to do with accounting procedures that are used.
Well, that's what I mean. Is it just some kind of procedure? I'd say, without looking at this Treasury statement last year, I'm going to say the budget deficit was $1.6 trillion, $1.5 trillion, $1.4 trillion, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Yet you look at the amount of debt was up $3 trillion.
Yeah.
All right, so it's not even close.
Now, yeah.
What Carl said
maybe that's due. Payment shifts, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. It could be some intergovernmental stuff. But now Carl's saying this other thing says we're off by like 25%. Well, if we start going out for bonds for that, what's it going to do to the market?
Yeah.
I mean, at the same time, we're pissing off countries that normally invest here. What if Canada says we're not going to invest anymore here?
The Fed would have to buy all those bonds.
Well,
I think they end up buying them anyway because...
maybe you're going to... Now, if they're going to make you buy them, where's the interest rate got to go? I don't think they're gonna get your money out of your wallet for 4.3.
If the Fed is printing money slower than what the European Central Bank wants to do with respect to these European nations wanting to, you know, increase their defense spending, then that actually works against Trump because the vehicles that are coming in from Germany are going to cost a lot less. Maybe that's part of this whole thing right here. But the problem is it's going to punish the Europeans themselves because their bananas are going to cost more, right? Their potatoes are going to cost more if they're shipping them in from Idaho. So it's going to have a devastating...
Wait a minute. You guys got bananas in Idaho now?
What?
You got bananas in Idaho?
No, just bananas coming in from another country, like Haiti maybe.
Did you celebrate St. Patrick's at all yesterday or no?
I wore green on my shorts. My gray shorts. There's a little green on it.
What'd you do? Put a I'm Irish button on them or what?
No, that my tie string on my shorts.
Oh, God.
That's it.
Anyway, talk at you next week. How's everybody learning? How's things going on out there?
I did the midterm report on Friday, and it was a lot better than last semester because what I did this semester is I have these hard due dates each week, and then if you're late, it costs you 80%. So it's encouraging students to turn in work on time.
Do I get? Do I still get to sit in the back of the class if I ever get out there?
Well, all my classes this semester are online. Most of our classes at the undergraduate level at A&T.
So why? How come you want the federal employees to go back to work and you don't want to go back to work?
Well, I love being in the classroom, but my job says I can stay home.
You guys are next.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe I'll get dozed.
S&P futures down 24. NASDAQ futures down 125. What happened to our rally of yesterday? Hal, talk to you next week. Thank you, buddy. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.